We have been doing Ask the Doctors for nearly 22 months here on Radio Boston now, folks. And wow, it feels as important today as it did in those early days in 2020. So let's jump right in. It's time. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What do you need to know right now about rapid at-home testing? Should you be masking? What kind of masks? When and where? What about immunity? Do you have it from Omicron? If you get Omicron, will you have it? Ask your questions. Joining us now, Dr. Cassandra Pierre, infectious disease physician and the associate hospital epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center, also an assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. Welcome back, Dr. Pierre.
It's great to be back. Thanks, Tiziana.
Great to have you. Also, we have a new voice this week on Ask the Doctors, Dr. Simone Wilds, an infectious disease expert at South Shore Health. Dr. Wilds, welcome for the first time.
Thank you for having me.
And hearing my scratchy voice here, doctors, is a great point to say I feel particularly invested in Ask the Doctors this week. I always do, but I am broadcasting from home this week after getting a breakthrough case of coronavirus a week and a half ago, vaccinated and boosted. And I know we're seeing more of those and so many people concerned about Omicron. So let's start there. Dr. Pierre, the latest numbers show a dramatic rise in infection. The state logged a 20.6 to 20.7% positive test rate, and that's almost double the test rate of last Monday. How are you reacting to that? And is it about to get worse, or does that mean we are at some peak?
So first of all, Tiziana, I am sorry that you are sick, that you've gotten a breakthrough case, but I'm glad that you are well enough to broadcast.
Thank you.
These numbers are certainly, if you had asked us a few weeks ago, a few months ago, were higher than we would have expected. But in the setting of a very highly transmissible virus, or a virus that at least is experiences highly transmissible, and the winter holidays, we kind of had a perfect storm that allowed people to go home, to travel, and to then transmit the virus. So it absolutely is concerning. However, a few factors may be on our side. One, that the holidays are over, at least for now. And so people are resuming the rhythms of their lives. There's less traveling, less large groups of people coming together. And also more people, at least we see here at Boston Medical Center, are getting vaccinated, whether that be for their primary series, which is wonderful, or for their boosters. So that's really important. That said, you know, we still have a road ahead of us. This is, you know, a virus that is experienced at least as causing more transmission due to potentially immune evasion. And so it's something that we are going to be keeping our eye out. And we do expect to see more cases, but hopefully keep the numbers of death and severe disease lower than they are now.
There's a lot there to pick up on, Dr. Pierre, but Dr. Wilds, I think the piece I'll turn to you on first is what Dr. Pierre just said about immunity and evasion. We are increasingly hearing questions from people about, you know, former infection held at least some potential to keep you immune from future infection. That does not appear to be the case with Omicron. So one, is that correct? And two, if that is correct, could we see, and given the level of transmissibility of Omicron, could we see a huge surge in Omicron that would last a very long time? Because basically anyone could get it.
Yes. I first want to hope that you feel better soon.
And
to what Dr. Pierre had said, you know, we are seeing a lot more cases. In fact, so many breakthrough cases here at our hospital, too, at South Shore Health. And the big question is about the immune evasion. And we all were hoping that with Omicron that there would be better protection with the vaccines. And unfortunately, that's not the case. However, we do see that there's a significant increase when in our immunity when we get the booster. And so, you know, the key thing that I've been trying to encourage everyone who have gotten their primary series of vaccines to get the booster. You know, right now there's 33% of individuals who have gotten the booster. So that's definitely not where we want people to be. We definitely want to have higher numbers because we have found that Omicron is very good at the immune evasion process. And so we want to encourage people to get their booster. Now, the other question was about levels of transmission, whether or not we expect to see higher levels. And I think right now we will more than likely be seeing higher numbers, but hopefully they're going to peak soon. I think the data suggests that maybe in a week or two, the numbers should peak, which would coincide with after all the holiday travel that we should start to see numbers decreasing, which will be very good for us, especially as the hospitals are like bursting at their seams right now.
All right, calls are just flowing in, so let's start 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your coronavirus questions. Judy is on the line in Brookline. Please go ahead, Judy.
Hi, I understand about the increased transmissibility, but it would be really helpful for me to know how people that are getting breakthrough infections are getting them. Like, what did they do? Did they get together with family and outsiders? We're very careful, and I have an immunocompromised spouse I'm trying to protect, and wear, you know, a mask when I go to the supermarket. But I don't wear a mask outside anymore if I can keep my distance. And I want to know, what are people doing that they got it even though they were triple vaxxed?
Great question, Dr. Pierre. What can we tell? What can we say?
I think there's a variety of ways, but I think, you know, obviously this is a person-to-person infection, so the settings in which we have seen COVID-19 being spread are still the scenarios in which they continue to spread, including for breakthrough infections. And that includes holiday celebrations. That includes potentially going to a gym where people are not consistently masked, enjoying dinner, a meal with individuals around a table that are not masked. Individuals that come into your home, potentially caregivers, might bring that in. These are the situations where we have seen and continue to see it spread. To your point, Judy, I would say going out and exercising in the elements is something that I feel people can continue to do safely. We know that the risk of transmission continues to be low, even for Omicron, in those outdoor spaces with good ventilation, as long as we keep good distance from others. So I think that was something that I would continue to recommend, you know, that you do if this is part of your, you know, self-care regimen. But you know, going to the grocery store, those brief limits of time, you know, those brief times where we are in contact with other people, potentially lower risk of transmission, but, you know, to the point where people may be out and about without masks, there is some smaller risk. The larger risks are when you are with others, especially in large crowds, in, you know, celebrating without masks or in indoor spaces without masks. Those are the continue to be the risks that we see.
All right, let's pick up a question from Twitter, actually. This one comes from @LoganLife, Laura Logan, who says, is it beneficial to use a nasal irrigator such as a neti pot, or would that be more likely to spread the virus if you are carrying it? Dr. Wiles.
Well, you know, with regards to the neti pot, I don't think we have a lot of data as to how it's going to affect transmission. However, I would say that I would imagine that if you do have COVID and you're using the neti pot, you're in a place where there are a lot of other people, that it could be potentially a source of spreading it because it's a respiratory virus. And so I probably wouldn't recommend the neti pot use at this time. I think we're going to try to minimize the spread of COVID as much as we can within our families and in our communities. And anything we do at home that can help to minimize that spread, I think I would encourage people to stay away from doing things that increase the spread in the community.
Thank you for that. 800-423-8255 to ask your coronavirus question, or as Laura just did, you can tweet us at Radio Boston. We have Risa on the line in Newburyport. Go ahead, Risa.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I was wondering how much the caretakers of my six-month-old son, who are all triple vaccinated, should avoid contact with unvaccinated people.
So, and Dr. Pierre, let's come back to you. So the question is, if one is vaccinated but taking care of someone who is particularly vulnerable, Risa has a six-month-old, but I think this is a broader question as well, what are the risks of being exposed to unvaccinated people? You know, I understand not everybody can control that, but your reactions there.
Hi, Risa. Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. I have under five your own children as well. So worry about their risks and their health. You know, I think it's difficult to dictate who other people might socialize with, but in terms of what the risks are for individuals who are fully vaccinated, we know that there continues to be a lower risk of transmission to those individuals compared to individuals who have been unvaccinated. That said, unvaccinated individuals continue to pose a risk for both infection and transmission of infection. And breakthrough cases, unfortunately, in your case as well, Tiziana, as you have personal experience of, can happen. And so the good news, I would say, for Risa, is that we have some growing evidence, including from household studies, that show that even with Omicron, individuals who have received that booster do seem to have a lower risk of going on to cause a secondary infection. And so that's really good news. I would say that as much as possible, though, you know, if we are in large indoor spaces where there are individuals who are of unknown vaccine status to us, having that mask in place will always be a good strategy. And we'll reduce the risk of that.
Let's go back to the phones here, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm hoping that we've got Bonnie in Mattapan up. Bonnie, do we have you?
Yes, you do.
Go ahead, Bonnie.
Hi, so my question is, how soon after a COVID infection should someone get their primary series of vaccination?
Okay, Dr. Wilds.
So Bonnie, that's a really great question and one that I get quite frequently. And there are actually two answers that I tend to give my patients. And there's one that I will say that, you know, the CDC recommendations online, they say, well, you know, you can wait for 90 days because we know that you have antibodies. They're probably going to hang around for that period of time. So you can wait for 90 days. After your COVID infection, before you get the vaccine. What I do say to a lot of patients, though, is that if you are well and say 2 weeks after the acute infection, you're doing well and you're someplace that they're offering the vaccine, you can go ahead and get the vaccine at that time. You know, the CDC didn't give very hard and fast rules about when you absolutely have to get the vaccines. So we try to get as many people vaccinated as we can when we can. And so if you're over your acute illness and you're able to go out and interact with individuals, you can go ahead and get your vaccine. The only absolute thing that I must mention, if you got monoclonal antibodies, you absolutely have to wait for those 90 days before you get your vaccine because it affects how effective your vaccine is going to be.
So you should check with if you received any health care after having COVID, Dr. Wilds, you should check with your health care provider to be sure whether or not you got that treatment, monoclonal antibodies, right? Because if you did, you have to wait.
Absolutely. So always check with your health care provider before you go ahead and get the vaccine.
Okay, thank you. That's really helpful. Okay, let's go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. And again, you can tweet us as well. We've got Abhishek in Cambridge. Go ahead.
Hello. So my question was about colleges and universities. So as the spring semester starts, there'll be hundreds and thousands of students who will come back to campuses. And with the high transmission rate, do you think that that's a good idea to bring everyone back in January, which would further overwhelm the Boston area hospitals?
So I get a sense that you have a feeling on this, Abhishek, but let me turn to Dr. Pierre. Dr. Pierre, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks for calling, Abhishek. I think it's a great question, and some universities have handled this in different ways. Some are putting a pause on the return to in-person schooling, and some are just diving right in. I think, honestly, we do have tools at our disposal right now to reduce the risk of transmission. And so it is true that many are returning to the campuses, maybe potentially infected. Many of the universities, though, continue to have really good testing requirements in place to reduce the risk of in-classroom or on-campus transmission. And those testing requirements and guidances are backed up by creating spaces where students can safely quarantine or isolate and continue to receive their education. So I think this really is a question about how individual universities handle this on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, having a high-risk a population that's likely to be out and about, potentially at higher risk for exposure and then infection coming back, is recipe for continuing to have high levels of transmission. But if there are good policies in place to ensure that people are tested, that they are isolated promptly after diagnosis and detection, then I think that you can really limit that. And there is a really huge benefit on the other side of having that in person, or at least returning on campus for education, in terms of lowering the consequences that we've seen, the mental health consequences of isolation. So I think it's a tough question, but I think the individual processes you put in place can help to mitigate transmission.
You know, Dr. Pierre, you just spoke about testing a couple times there. We've got a caller in Andover, Aztab, who has a question about testing. Aztab, go ahead. Hello, Aztab. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. My question is regarding testing. On New Year's Eve, we were exposed to a person who was tested positive, and my wife has subsequently had some COVID symptoms.
Some symptoms.
And since yesterday, I've been trying to go to a testing center, both of us, and there are none available. CVS, Walgreens have no appointments available till 11th of January. I tried to get home testing kits at CVS and Walgreens. I've been to like 8 of them since yesterday in our area of 3 different towns. None of them have any testing kits, home testing kits available, in stock. The government and the state websites, when I ordered the testing kits, they said will be delivered between January 10th and January 17th. So I don't understand what's going on and how are we supposed to deal with this situation.
Aztab, I'm so sorry for your situation and your frustration. And Dr. Wildes, I know you know the story we just heard is not uncommon right now.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many people have been complaining of the same thing, just the difficulty finding the test. And I know that when we started with COVID about 2 years ago, we had challenges with testing. And unfortunately, we still have challenges today. I wish I had a quick answer as to where you can find tests. One thing I would suggest is just keep calling. I know that they're expecting more shipments of testing. I know Governor Baker has been trying to garner more tests because it's really important so people can do testing not only at home, but at the different facilities. So I would say just keep calling the pharmacy, call your primary care. Just keep calling. And of course, if you develop symptoms and get really sick, then you might have to go to urgent care so someone can do a test on you, which most hospitals and facilities have. But I'm not saying you need to go right now, but in case you develop some severe symptoms.
So that is also your advice, Dr. Wildes, is if you are experiencing symptoms and you are not able through any of the standard channels, then you, I'm aware that there has been a plea, for example, from emergency room doctors not to go to an emergency room to try to get a COVID test right now because they are overwhelmed. But if you are symptomatic and you don't have other options, you're saying go to that urgent care facility, for example, and get tested. Is that the priority?
Yes, that is absolutely the priority right now. We don't want you to stay at home and suffer. We want you to come in because we have tests available that we can help, but not to go to the emergency room if you're not severely ill.
All right, let's try to pick up one more call here. I'm going to go to, if we've got her up, let's go to Louise in Cape Cod. Do we have Louise up or Lucy?
Yes, we do.
I'm sorry, which is it? Hi, go ahead.
Hi. My daughter is 16 weeks pregnant. She's had both her vaccines and her booster. And her daughter, her doctor is very concerned about pregnant women and COVID. If she were to get some kind of a breakthrough case, how does that affect her baby if she were to be relatively in good health with, you know, with the virus? I mean, that it wouldn't put her in the emergency room or, any, you know, the intensive care or anything, because she's young and healthy.
Great question, Dr. Pierre.
Hi. So I guess congratulations on your hopefully soon to be grandchild. But we definitely have received these questions as well. Yes, women who are pregnant are at higher risk for severe complications of COVID-19. However, just as other people who have underlying chronic health conditions that put them at higher risk for severe complications, getting vaccinated and then getting a booster reduces their risk of infection and then also reduces their risk of severe disease and hospitalization. So although, yes, it would be best, especially now, to try and, you know, shield and reduce your daughter's risk of infection at this time, absolutely, because pregnant women who, especially those who are unvaccinated, have a higher risk of preterm labor and complications in the second trimester. We see those happening less in vaccinated and especially in women who are pregnant who have had the booster. So I would say that, yes, we want to reduce the risk of exposure of infection, we're not particularly worried in young, healthy women who don't have underlying chronic medical conditions to compound concerns of any untoward effects or of increased untoward effects with that additional protection of the booster.
All right. And so, Dr. Pierre, I'm going to stay with you for 1 second longer. On infection, offline before the show, we heard a number of questions, people asking, with there being so many breakthrough cases with Omicron, do we know once somebody has had Omicron, whether they are resistant to future transmission or not? Do you get immunity from this exposure? Do we know?
So, we feel like we've seen with other infections, with other variants, with SARS-CoV-2, the Delta and other variants before it, that infection absolutely does increase your immune reserves, that it decreases risk of future infection. And so I would imagine that this would continue to be the case, including for Omicron. But what, you know, the unstated concern, of course, is that as we continue to have transmission, and especially as we continue to have relatively unvaccinated parts of the world where high levels of transmission can continue to occur, that we may see different variants that may also cause immune evasion. And so we don't know what our relative level of immunity to Omicron may offer us in terms of protection against those. That said, even though we don't have evidence at this point, based on our previous evidence, having this Omicron infection, and especially and particularly most importantly, getting vaccinated and getting boosted will and should continue to provide us meaningful protection against severe complications of further infections in the future.
All right. That is Dr. Cassandra Pierre, infectious disease physician and associate hospital epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center, an assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. We also had with us Dr. Simone Wilds, an infectious disease expert at South Shore Health. Excuse me, Dr. Pierre, thank you.
Thank you. Get better soon.
Thank you. And Dr. Wilds, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.